one of the biggest questions I get when I talk about animal-based diets, and I recommend that people try and get 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight per day. That is 1 gram of animal protein per pound of body weight per day, is, Paul, is this type of diet sustainable? Could everyone on the planet eat this way? And what about the impacts on the climate and the environment? I've done multiple podcasts on this in the past, most recently with Rob Wolf, who wrote a book called Sacred Cow. We'll link to that in this video here. But I was recently sent an article from the World Resources Institute by a good friend of mine, and I thought I would just go through this article and talk about why I think it's BS. Why I think they're completely wrong in their assertion that that meat is not sustainable and that beef cannot be part of a sustainable diet. So here is the article. This is the World Resource Institute, and the title is Sustainable Diets, What You Need to Know in 12 Charts. This article is from 2016, but many of the same arguments continue to be applied. So we'll just go through the charts real quickly. The first chart says the world needs to close a 70% food gap. They're saying there's a required increase in food calories to feed 9.7 billion people by 2050, meaning that between when this article was written, presumably 2016, and they're saying between 2006 and 2050, we're going to have to make 70% more calories to feed all these people. Now, you have only to go to the first graphic, and I'm already having disputes with this article. I want this video to be mostly about the sustainability of meat and the consumption of meat in a healthy diet, so I don't want to get too sidetracked, but I think it's important to consider something that I might call the Ishmael effect, which is the idea that if you are simply always trying to close a caloric gap, you will always have more people to feed. And if you feed 10 billion people, then there will soon be 12 billion people. This is just the way of life. So this is not an argument against feeding 10 billion people. It's just an argument to say that you're always going to have a caloric gap. Unless we institute other education measures or decide how we're going to help people in the world understand that there is a limited amount of space and calories. What is the actual carrying capacity of the world? We don't know. People will always be growing. The population will always be growing. We will always be needing to produce more calories. And as you will see in this article, I think producing the least quality calories is the worst idea ever. Because as I've stated, inevitably the population of the world will continue to grow unless we have some sort of mass realization or education about population control. And when you feed more people with lower quality calories, you end up with more sick people. What we really need is more healthy people. So what we should not be asking is, how do we get enough calories to feed 9.7 billion people in 2050? What we should really be asking is two questions. Number one, do we have a population problem on our hands in the earth as we know it? What is the carrying capacity of the earth? Okay, question one. Question two, how do we feed 9.7 billion people with the highest quality food so that as many of those 9.7 billion are as healthy as possible? Having billions and billions of people who are malnourished is a major problem, and going to the lowest quality foods, that is grains and plant foods, to nourish more people is only going to give us more problems with malnourished individuals. I will refer you to this paper, Animal Source Foods, Sustainability Problem or Malnutrition and Sustainability Solution, Perspective Matters. The first line of the abstract states that when this paper was published, which was in 2020, globally 2 billion people in the world already suffered from micronutrient deficiencies, right? 2 billion people in the world, with 151 million children under 5 from stunting, and millions more have impaired cognitive development related to poor nutrition. This is partly due to insufficient consumption of animal-sourced foods. I'll repeat that again. This is partly due to insufficient consumption of animal-sourced foods. So basically what I would say is, as they say, animal-sourced foods have been described by the World Health Organization as the best source of high-quality, nutrient-rich food for children aged 6 to 23 months. Livestock and this type of farming are vital to sustainability as they play a critical role in improving nutrition, reducing poverty, improving gender equity, improving livelihoods, increasing food security, and improving health. Okay? The nutritional needs of the world's poor, particularly women and children, must be considered in sustainability debates. There is no consideration of any of this in this article from the World Research Institute. But we'll see that as we dig further into it. So let's return to that discussion of sustainability. So we've talked about this calorie gap. Global diets are shifting toward overconsumption. I'm not quite sure what they're driving at here. They say people are consuming more animal-based protein. That's actually a great thing, probably. These are all extrapolations between 2010 and 2050, but I think it's a good thing people are consuming more animal-based protein. People are consuming more calories. Please refer back to the podcast I did with Tucker Goodrich. I think the majority of the reason people are consuming more calories is because their appetites are incorrectly programmed by the processed foods that are high in things like seed oils and processed sugars in our diets. But I think generally speaking, it's a good thing people are consuming more calories as long as these calories are not processed. All regions already consume more protein than average dietary requirements, with the highest consumption in wealthy regions. So this I would debate massively. For example, the average American man eats nearly 100 grams of protein per day, almost double the amount of protein he needs at 56 grams. So they're basically saying in this paper that the RDA for a 70 kilogram male American human is 56 grams per day, which is an absurdity. If you look at the way that RDA is calculated, they're looking at net nitrogen usage, adjusting a little bit for variable absorption and utilization of protein, and then giving a little more of a buffer. I would like all of the 70 kilogram men out there to eat 56 grams of protein without regard to whether it's coming from animals or plants, because they're not regarding this in this paper, and see what happens to your muscle mass. You cannot maintain enough muscle mass as a American human male at 70 kilograms of weight at 56 grams of protein to really do good things in your life, to be structurally sound, to have a preferable bone density, to lift weights, to do pull-ups, to surf, to climb rocks, to do cool things. And similarly, the requirement for protein for women is less. Women cannot maintain adequate bone density or adequate muscle mass to maintain optimal glucose sensitivity with this small amount of protein. That small amount of protein will prevent protein malnutrition, known as kwashiorkor, and it probably will result in a non-negative nitrogen balance. But if you give people more than 56 grams of protein and they maintain more muscle mass, or they are stronger, or they recover better, or they sleep better, or they have a better mood, or they have better bone density, or they are smarter, or they function better, then how can you say that 56 grams of protein is adequate for a human? That is a paltry amount of protein for a human, and there is no regard to the differential quality in that protein between animals and plants, which we know is a real thing. I've done videos on this in the past. I've spoken about it at length. There is something called a DIAS, the Digestible Indispensable Amino Acid Score. There is no comparison in the utilizability of animal source protein versus plant source protein. Plant source proteins are abysmally utilized by humans. If you look at any of the vegan bodybuilders, they're not eating 56 grams of plant protein per day. I guarantee you that. You have only to look at real dyed-in-the-wool vegans and look at their physique, compare it to my physique, compare it to people who eat 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight, I eat 200 grams of protein per day, to see a massive difference in maintenance of muscle. This is no question. If you give people more protein than 56 grams per day for an American male, or more than perhaps 45 for an American woman, you will see more muscle mass, better performance across all areas of their life, better bone density, better fertility, better libido, better weight maintenance. It's absolutely ridiculous to suggest that humans can eat 56 grams of protein per day and make no distinction between animal and plant-based protein in terms of quality. But the brazen lack of consideration continues here. People are eating more protein than they need, especially in wealthy regions. Disagree with that massively, okay? They're saying here, the gap between the average American's daily protein needs and the amount they're already getting from plant sources is less than the equivalent of one chicken breast. Except they're missing the fact, number one, that 56 grams of protein is not enough for an optimal human. And number two, that plant protein and animal protein are not created equally. Animal-based foods are generally more resource-intensive and environmentally impactful to produce than plant-based foods. This is where things really get bad. Beef production requires 20 times more land and emits 20 times more greenhouse gas emissions per unit of edible protein than common plant-based protein sources, okay? This is where we really have to question what they're saying this. They don't provide any reference, so I have no idea what that numbers are based on, but let's talk about each of those individually. Beef production requires 20 times more land. I don't understand what they're talking about. The majority of land that cattle are grazed on is non-tillable land. It's non-arable land. You can't even grow crops on that land. These plant-based interest groups, these groups that want to talk about the sustainability of raising meat, always bring this point up, but never present the full story, which is really that the majority of land that cattle are grazed on cannot be used to grow crops. And furthermore, if we're talking about greenhouse gases, that is a huge rabbit hole that we must address in kind. The assumption that cows emitting more greenhouse gases, specifically methane, which is then converted to carbon dioxide equivalents, is bad for the environment, is based on a premise which is not substantiated, in my opinion. This is a caveat. This is an aside. Please refer to the recent podcast I've done with Patrick Moore and Alex Epstein for more on this. But I want to show one thing real quickly and just leave it at this. This is a graphic that is quite complex, but we have two curves here. We have curves that are calculated based on the frequency of light and the amount of warming that happens, which is the area under this curve if you integrate it. And this is the curve that would occur if there were no greenhouse gases, this blue line, in the Earth's atmosphere. And you can see that if there were no greenhouse gases in the Earth's atmosphere, there would be this amount of transmission of heat into the space from the Earth, which is 394 watts per square meter. Thankfully, we do have greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, which makes our Earth inhabitable. And that is the green line here. If CO2 is 0 parts per million, then we have an area under the curve of 307 watts per meter squared, per square meter. Now, the important curves are the black curve and the red curve. And this is what it shows, that basically at our current carbon dioxide level of 400 parts per million, the area under this curve, which is an indication of how much the Earth's radiation, heat radiation, is able to move into space, is 274 watts per square meter. 277 watts per square meter. If we increase that amount of carbon dioxide to 800 parts per million, which is what's found on submarines, which is what's used in greenhouses, we would then reduce that amount of transmission of heat into the space by 274 watts per square meter. Essentially, no change. To assume that carbon dioxide is a damaging greenhouse gas completely ignores this pure physics. And no one who is saying that, I don't think, understands this pure physics and these curves from Max Planck and others. So let's just assume, for the purposes of this video, let's just ignore that and talk about carbon dioxide as apples to apples. But I want to say clearly that I am not convinced, I'm still learning about this, but I am not convinced that carbon dioxide is the massive greenhouse gas villain that it's been made out to be. And if that triggers you, please do your homework and understand that curve that I just showed you. But let's assume that it is a problem, and let's talk about carbon dioxide for carbon dioxide as apples to apples. I generally don't like these discussions. I prefer to discuss ecosystems' impact, because when you focus on carbon dioxide, you ignore all of the negative ecosystems' impact, that is erosion and many other problems that happen with monocrop agriculture that is needed to grow plants. But we'll get to that in a moment. Let's talk about carbon dioxide for carbon dioxide. As I said, cows burp and fart, mostly burp, methane, as do humans when we fart, as do bogs, as does the ocean, as do termites. Many things produce methane, which must be converted to carbon dioxide equivalents in the atmosphere. The argument from plant-based interests who want to feed the world's growing population on nutrient-deficient grains and give many more people kwashiorkor, which is protein malnutrition, is based on the fact that growing those grains produces less carbon than growing a cow from when the methane is converted to carbon dioxide equivalents. They're making that assumption based on a couple of limited calculations. Firstly, they're over-considering feedlot agriculture. Many of you know about regenerative agriculture, and the incredible nature of this type of agriculture. When you do rotational grazing, when you grass feed and grass finish a cow, you are in fact sequestering more carbon into the soil than that cow is producing in methane equivalents. And therefore, there is no comparison between the type of agriculture that we should be doing, which is regenerative grass-fed agriculture and plant-based agriculture of any way, shape, or form, of any type. Plant-based agriculture is also widely ignored or given a free pass in terms of its contributions to carbon in the atmosphere with tilling. When you till soil, you release tons of carbon into the atmosphere. You disrupt the soil microbiome, which is called the mycorrhizal networks. You destroy the lives of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions, hundreds of millions of animals, insects, rodents, etc. So the problems with monocrop agriculture are massive. In fact, because of monocrop agriculture in the Western United States, more than one third of the Corn Belt has completely lost its topsoil, its carbon-rich topsoil, which has led to massive amounts of erosion. And yet this is never discussed. And this type of agriculture is always given a free pass. More than one third of the Corn Belt in the Midwest, nearly 100 million acres, has completely lost its carbon-rich topsoil. I'll show you the actual paper, but I wanted to highlight this. Notably, tillage erosion is not included in national assessments of soil loss, and the research highlights the urgent need to include tillage erosion in the soil erosion models that are used in the US to incentivize adoption of no-till farming method, right? The A horizon, which is the top layer of soil, has primarily been lost on hilltops and ridgelines, which indicates that tillage erosion, downslope movement of soil by repeated plowing, is the major driver of soil loss in the Midwest. How do you think Beyond Burgers are getting made? It's monocrop agriculture. It's monocrop agriculture. And yet this is what we're championing to replace meat? If you want the actual reference, here it is. This is from the Proceedings of National Academy of Science, the extent of soil loss across the US Corn Belt. You can read it for yourself. It's also important to point out that much data that has been used to suggest that cows produce lots of methane is based on faulty FAO data. If you look at EPA data from 2016, which I will show you here, this is a graphic from my book. You will see that beef cattle, this is EPA data, were responsible for 1.9% of total US greenhouse gas emissions in 2016. It's right here. And that agricultural crops were actually responsible for more greenhouse gas emissions. The reference is here. This is the US Environmental Protection Agency EPA document 430-R-16-002 from 2016, et cetera, et cetera. It's all right there. You can go read it if you don't believe me. Furthermore, I want to share with you graphics from White Oak Pastures, which are based on a life cycle analysis that was done there. They clearly show that when you look at this in detail, especially this part right here, the amount of carbon sequestered into the soil is much higher than the amount of the actual production from the cows, meaning that these cows are carbon negative, something that plant-based emissions, plant-based burgers, soybeans, Impossible Burgers, or Beyond Burgers cannot claim. This is the future, regenerative agriculture. If we believe that carbon dioxide is a molecule we should not be putting into the atmosphere in excess amounts, which again, I think we should carefully consider that as well. Regenerative agriculture completely solves that problem. Regenerative agriculture is quite scalable because of something called the Conservation Reserve Program. There are hundreds of thousands of acres in the United States for which the federal government pays farmers to have them remain fallow, which means they don't farm anything on them because they've been monocropped into oblivion. Well, the way you rehabilitate that land is you put cows on it. The fastest way to rehabilitate land, to rehabilitate the quality of your soil, is to put cows on the soil. I'm remembering now that if you guys have questions about this, you should also listen to the podcast I recently did with Robbie Sansom. He is the CEO of Force of Nature Meats, which is an amazing company. This is a graphic that he shared with me that I will share with you guys in this video. Which do you think is better for the environment? A regenerative cattle farm on the right or a monocropped organic farm on the left? Monocrop agriculture is horrible for ecosystems. Like I said, I much prefer to think about this from an ecosystems perspective rather than from a carbon perspective. But even from a carbon perspective, we can make very strong arguments that thinking about plant-based agriculture doesn't solve the problem long-term. And if you were following the news recently, Beyond Beef stock crashed massively. They lost over 30% when revelations came out about the problem with their supply chains and the amount of carbon that they were responsible for. So These fake burgers do not have a zero carbon footprint either. And as I mentioned, any monocrop thing that you're eating, whether it's kale or chard or whatever, is going to have a significant carbon footprint related to all the tillage of the soil, which is often ignored. And as we talked about, it's nutritionally bereft food. Let's go back to the original article. We talked about all of these debates. The biggest beef is with beef. Well, they say here, beef is extremely inefficient to produce as cattle consume a huge amount of calories and protein in order to produce a relatively small amount of calories and protein for human consumption. Except that the majority of the calories that the cows are consuming are grass, which last I checked, humans can't eat. This article basically goes on to suggest that people change their purchasing habits and to eat less beef because it will be better for the environment. I say no way. That leads to massive amounts of malnutrition, increasing hospital bills, lower quality of life. What we need to do is do more of the right type of agriculture, not because of carbon, I don't believe, but because of ecosystems, because tilling land destroys ecosystems and that depletes the quality of the soil. It is all about the quality of the soil, and soil must have more carbon to hold rainwater. 1% of carbon in the soil leads to 1 inch of rain being held, meaning if you have 5% carbon in the soil, you can hold a 5-inch catastrophic rain event and the soil will not erode or wash off. When you have monocrop agriculture, you quickly deplete the soil of carbon and you lead to massive erosion. Why is this never talked about in terms of sustainability? So the major things that are missed here in terms of sustainability are the impact of the nutrients in the food on the health of the humans and the impact of ecosystems of monocrop agriculture and the fact that you are destroying soil, which will have many downstream negative consequences. For those of you that are watching this, I just want to show you the Wikipedia entry for kwashiorkor. This is what happens when there is a lack of nutrients and there is excess aflatoxins from moldy grains. Kwashiorkor is what happens when you do not feed children enough protein and they consume a diet that is high in carbohydrates, including corn, cassava, or rice without adequate protein. But that is the future that the World Resource Institute would have you believe in. And I say that is bullshit. For those of you who are watching this video, you realize that the sun is now setting. I'm losing my ambient light, so I better wrap it up. Beyond Beef may be bad for the environment. This is from Seeking Alpha, which is an investment website, but just corroborating many of the things I said. Beyond supply chain requires excessive fossil fuel transport, encourages monoculture, monocropping. ESG investors should be cognizant of the reality behind the green facade. And lo and behold, Beyond Beef's stock has crashed. Beyond Meat stock has crashed recently because consumers have woken up to this very sad reality. Here, the role of ruminants in reducing agriculture's carbon footprint in North America. It's been documented many, many times. This is how we do it, guys. This is the right way forward. So in summary, raising beef properly is totally sustainable and is perhaps our only answer for long-term sustainability of the health of humans on this planet. If we choose to become malnourished humans, that is a race to the bottom. This is a huge reason that I'm a fan of organ meats. You guys all know that I believe in the most nutrient-dense foods on the planet, which are animal muscle meat and organs. So many people cannot get enough organs, which is why we do what we do at Heart and Soil. Check out this review. It's amazing. This is a review from Hunter S., who's taking our hair, skin, and nails product. He says, I love my Heart and Soil supplements. I just have to say that the Heart and Soil products are life-changing in caps. I literally crave taking my fire starter and beef organs in the morning because they make me feel that dang good. I've had a long journey of trying everything from plant-based to vegetarian to paleo to low lectin, lastly keto. It wasn't until I heard the Petersons and then Paul Saladino on Joe Rogan talk about the carnivore diet that I started hearing stuff and started making a lot of sense to me. I figured I'd give it a try for 30 days, see how it went. 6 months later, I'm still going carnivore strong. I feel healthier and better than ever. I've had everything from osteopenia, leaky gut, IBS, eczema, Raynaud's, unexplained weight gain, inability to lose weight, adrenal fatigue, hormone deficiencies, ADHD, amenorrhea. After countless doctor's visits, nutritionists, and tens of thousands of dollars in healthcare, conventional doctors could never tell me what was wrong. They told me I was crazy and could never diagnose the root cause. No one ever told me to take a look at what I was eating. It's been a journey of self-discovery, trial and error, and a lot of experimentation. But at 30, I'm finally healthier, leaner, and stronger than ever before. My eczema is gone. My weight is healthfully stabilizing and my moods are steady. Thanks for helping me live a radical life the way I was intended to. That's the kind of stuff that makes me so happy, guys. Check us out at heartandsoil.co and tell people in your life about the power of organs, whether they get fresh or desiccated from us in Heart and Soil. This is how we change lives, but do not fear meat and organs. These are incredible foods for humans, and they are part of a sustainable future for us that must be considered entirely, wholly. All right, stay radical, guys.